The town may be kind of small, but these folks have big smiles and big hearts. And they know what it is to have simple fun down our way. For old-fashioned singing and homey gatherings make living mighty pleasant.
Comedians are the only ones that you pay to hear them talk. Talk to me. Make me listen.
Free yourself, won't you? You're right. You're right. Not those fuckers who want to tell you how to think. You're fucking right. Sorry, wrong meeting. Again.
What Bill said will never change because it is the basic truth and they are never wrong.
Plenty of people say he is the best American comedian the country has ever produced, and he was only 32 when he died.
Everyone comfy? Get comfy! Get comfy! Because the show's about to start!
Keep rolling.
Welcome to Abandoned Albums, the documentary podcast where we take a closer look at some albums that may have been forgotten about over time, some albums you might not know existed, and some albums by some new, or at least new to us, artists we think you should know about. I'm your host, Keith R. Higgins.
The paper doesn't give many details. Tell me about this.
On October 1st, 1993, stand-up comedian Bill Hicks performed on David Letterman's new late-night talk show for the first time. It was a classic Hicks set that everyone had come to expect. In less than 7 minutes, Hicks delivered some of his most stinging commentary on America to date. Unfortunately, the only people who saw Hicks' set saw it live during the show's afternoon taping in the Ed Sullivan Theater. The comedian's performance never made it to air that evening. Letterman cut Hicks out of that night's episode.
On this episode of Abandoned Albums, we're going to take a look at comedian Bill Hicks. We'll highlight the two albums that were released on February 25th, 1997, 3 years after the comedian's untimely death from pancreatic cancer. The two albums are Arizona Bay and Rant in E Minor. If you're a fan of stand-up comedy, then you know who Bill Hicks is. And if you know who he is, you recognize his importance in the world of comedy. Now, throughout the podcast, you'll hear from his mother, Mary, his brother, Steve, and his sister, Lynn. You'll also hear from a host of other people, but the two primary voices you'll hear will be Bill's childhood friends, Dwight Slade and Kevin Booth. Where it makes sense and isn't disruptive, I'll try to introduce who is speaking, but I would ask that you worry less about who is saying what and consider more about what is being said. So let's let Bill's family and friends tell his story.
I'm here to sing some songs for my mama. One, two, three, four.
Bill's mother, Mary Hicks.
Bill was, he was interesting. All of my children were special. I had a girl, had only a girl. Then I had a boy, and then I had a baby. There was definitely something there that was different from Steve and Lynn growing up. But Bill, you should have known him, is all I can say.
Comedian and childhood friend Dwight Slade.
Because I think our parents were just happy being comfortable. Can we just go to church and be distracted by our religion? It's orderly here. Growing up in that environment, you start to get a little antsy because clearly there has to be something more. Lyndon Johnson talked about the Great Society back in the 60s, and I think he was keying into something.
The Great Society rests on abundance and liberty for all. It demands an end to poverty and racial injustice, to which we're totally committed in our time. But that is just the beginning. The Great Society is a place where every child can find knowledge to enrich his mind and to enlarge his talents. It is a place where leisure is a welcome chance to build and reflect, not a feared cause of boredom and restlessness. It is a place where man can renew contact with nature It is a place which honors creation for its own sake. But most of all, the Great Society is not a safe harbor, a resting place, a final objective, a finished work. It is a challenge constantly renewed, beckoning us toward a destiny where the meaning of our lives matches the marvelous products of our labor.
And then I think that Vietnam stalled that. So the generation that Bill and I came out of was, we were looking around going, well, there's got to be something else we can do with all this. I had told him that I wanted to be an actor, and he goes, come on, I'll show you these jokes that I wrote. And because we were joking around so much, he started saying, we should be a comedy team. It really, really fired him up, the importance of stand-up, that society cherished its funny people. And for Bill, he knew it. He knew that he was going to be the comic that shook people up.
People suck, and that's my contention. I can prove it on scratch paper and a pen. Give me a fucking Etch-A-Sketch. I'll do it in 3 minutes. The proof, the fact, the factorum. I'll show my work. Case closed. I'm tired of this backslapping art humanity neat bullshit. We're a virus with shoes, okay? That's all we are.
Dwight Slade.
Stand-up comedy was not on the map in the 70s for kids to want to be. But we were very determined, and so we started to do this very much guerrilla theater type of comedy amongst our friends. This group of people is just standing around, and you appear, and you do an outrageous sketch, and then you disappear. They were like gigs to us. This was what we were going to do. You know, you had to sacrifice your family, your relationship with girls, your popularity at school. We were sacrificing everything for this. And there was nowhere to do our craft. There was no open mics, there was nothing in 1970s Houston, Texas. As a backdrop to all this is how we met Kevin Booth. Bill and I just thought Kevin was hilarious just because he was this technical genius who could build things and blow things up.
Film director and childhood friend, Kevin Booth.
I was known as the instigator and a facilitator. I was able to get what's called a hardship driver's license when I was 14, without even like taking any lessons. Bill was like, let's go look at these guitars downtown. And I was like, I'd never driven downtown before. I was like, okay, I guess, you know, I'm game for this. You know, if you guys are gonna navigate the way. So we drove to downtown. On our way back, we passed this place called the Comedy Workshop in Montrose. And Bill and Dwight were like, that's that place that we've been reading about.
Once again, Dwight.
Most entertainers have to deal with the fact, well, I gotta get to LA or Hollywood. I gotta take acting lessons. I gotta get headshots. What's our problem? We can't go out on school nights. Bill and I talked about it and he says, we have to do it. And I was like, absolutely. The question was, how are you gonna get down there on a school night?
When you're in Bill's bedroom looking out, if you hop that fence, you were in the parking lot of the Catholic Church.
You could open the window, but there also was a storm window, and he became just very efficient at getting that thing open and getting out that window.
The evil Catholic boy with his 14-year-old driver's license was sitting there in the Catholic getaway wagon.
When we walked in, it was like, whoa. And there were chairs, and they were all pointed at the stage. And this was what it was all about. We did the first few jokes and it started working.
I think everybody was very receptive to them because they were like these little kids trying to be a part of like this adult world.
Bill and I got off stage and we were flying. And then the shit hit the fan. Mrs. Hicks calls Scott's mom, says, is Bill over there? No, they went down to the Comedy Workshop. Oh. So when Bill gets home, he gets nailed. Mrs. Hicks calls my parents and I get nailed. It went from being thrilled with the fact that, hey, we're doing this, to now what do? We're comics. We have to work on this career. We can do it. And just as I thought that, my father came home and said, I've bought a business in Klamath Falls, Oregon, and we're moving in July.
Here's a clip of Bill performing stand-up as a high school student.
You guys remember this? None of you remember this. This is weird. I got to see if this is universal or not. Remember this thing called flinching? You remember what this is? You guys, some guy would come up to you and they go, hey. And you go, God, what's up, man? And you go, ah, flinch, oh, you poke. The guy would go, oh, shit, I flinched. Here, poke me. Remember that? First time it happened to me, one of these guys comes up and he goes, hey, Hicks. I went, God, get away from me. And he goes, ah, flinched, oh, you poke. I said, get away from me, you jerk. Principal's walking by. The principal goes, what's going on here? And that guy goes, he flinched and won't let me poke him. I said, this guy's trying to hit me. The principal went, did you flinch?
Bill should have been famous right away.
We're open house night. I come to see, open house night. Your parents go up and talk to your teachers, find out you've been lying through your TV. His name is Bill? Moltvik. Come home the next night, my father's sitting there, and he goes, hold it, Moltvik. I went up to school last night, and I talked to your teachers, and I talked to Miss Jones, and she said you called her a frothing slug. What is that all about? Dad, she's a loser. Everyone's a loser, everyone's a jerk. Tell me, Mr. Blister, who's the real loser? I promise you won't get mad, Dad.
L.A. was something that had to be done. It was the next step. You had to go.
I cried, of course, and I said, Bill, nobody will say a thing if you don't go. And he said, Mom, this is hard for me, so I'm going, so please stop crying. If I don't make it, I'll come back, but I've got to try.
Steve Hicks, Bill's brother.
Being on Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles at the world-famous comedy store where people like Robin Williams and Richard Pryor and Billy Crystal also performed, and then Bill Hicks, that was the mecca for comedy. And Bill got his name up there. Okay, there's one for the books right there, you know. He was where he wanted to be, and that was pretty clear. He flew back from L.A. to be the best man at my wedding. I mean, he was always going to be my best man. And we were going to be there for each other whenever those times were. But he had to perform that night. And so after the wedding, a bunch of people went down there. And, hey, let's go see him. What the hell? Let's go down there, you know?
Bill's older sister, Lynn.
I didn't know I had a funny brother. That was the first I was aware that that was what he wanted to do as a serious profession. It was hilarious.
Once again, Dwight.
Coming to L.A. was such a romantic and meaningful and emotional experience. And then leaving was like a thief in the night with this every possession he has streaming out of the back of his car. Bill in his leather jacket with his guitar. And me going away with a knapsack to Oregon. Just glad to be the hell out of there.
Once Bill decided that he would just be in his home base and he would do his own comedy the way he wanted and that the world would come to him, well, it did.
Rumors spreading round in that Texas town. About the shack outside the games. And you know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you wanna go to that home out on the range. They got a lot of nice girls.
John Fernetti was a very successful lawyer, but just a terrific performer.
I was born in Wyoming. I lived there until I learned how to read a road map.
Well, I'd wanted to do it since I was 6 years old, but there was nowhere on earth to do it. And then just suddenly there was a place where you just walk in and people were lined up in the rain to get in and see it. And I wanted, like, everybody to hang around with Bill Hicks. Everyone knew he was just head, shoulders, waist, kneecaps, and ankles above everybody else.
Here's Kevin Booth.
Jay Leno showed up at the Annex, and they all adored Jay Leno at the time because he was the professional stand-up comic. You know, he was just the best.
Jay did help. Jay liked Bill's act. He gave Bill advice. He made a few phone calls.
When Leno said, "This guy is good," I would imagine Letterman knew totally he was.
My next guest is a stand-up comedian. He is making his network television debut on this program tonight. He is working this weekend at the Comedy Workshop in Houston, Texas. Please give a warm welcome to Bill Hicks.
All right. Good evening. Good evening. My name is Bill Hicks. Thank you. Full name is William Melvin Hicks. Thanks, Dad. It's a name with certain connotations, huh?
Hi, my name is Melvin Hicks. This is my wife and my sister.
Okay, Mama. All right. Yeah, I got a good look with it, too. You like my face? It's a classic. Trust me. Got the kind of face people walk up to me out of the blue and go, "What's wrong?" Nothing. Well, you know, it takes more energy to frown than it does to smile. Yeah. You know, it takes more energy to point that out than it does to leave me alone.
When the Comedy Annex started hopping for the first time, it was a really exciting place to be. And it was a place to go every night where there was drugs, alcohol, and women. You know, we were there every night. And I remember he came up to David Jondro and I, and he's like, "I want to try a drink. What's a drink people drink?" We said, "You want to try drinking for the first time? Order a margarita." And then he went up to the bar and he goes, "I'll have 7 margaritas." And he downed 7 margaritas and went up on stage.
And the bitterness came out for the first time. It just came pouring out. He was literally crawling around the stage with a full house of 200 people watching him. But he was still funny. People were still laughing the whole time.
The drinking was a way that he was able to have this breakthrough of really going out on the edge and not being concerned with people's reaction. And now all of a sudden he could really be bold and really say what he wanted and not be concerned.
Alcohol with Bill was definitely like throwing gasoline onto a fire. He was like suddenly not on Letterman anymore. He started losing bookings.
I got there in the middle of his set and nobody was laughing really.
He was laying down on his back, screaming into the microphone.
It was awful.
It was terrible. It wasn't a show anymore. No. It was a drunk on stage is what it was.
You know, to have a room clear, I felt bad for him.
He called me the next day and said, "Well, they fired me too. Seems to be the thing, everybody fires me." I'm like, "Well, yeah, it wasn't funny." We were sitting up, me and Bill, and he just started crying and he broke down and he said, "Man, I've got a problem. My life is out of control." My big answer was, "Well, just stop then, Bill. Just stop doing that." And he straightened back up real quick, but it was the one thing I always felt I let Bill down about. And it was just from ignorance. I just didn't know how to handle it, you know, didn't know what to do.
You know, I don't know what I would have said had I said anything. Maybe I should have, but I didn't.
And when the Bill Hicks Show became more about how drunk can we get Bill, instead of let's see how far Bill can take us with his ideas, that's when the party was over.
That was a moment of clarity for Bill.
He realized what he was working for, and this was in the way of it.
Bill knew there was no way he was going to be able to sustain any kind of sobriety surrounded by all these Houston comics. Bill realized that he had to jump ship. And as crazy as it sounds, moving to a big city by yourself is the way to go sober. And Bill just disappeared to New York.
That's when he went from being just an above average comedian to being something spectacular.
I was in Nashville, Tennessee last week, and after the show I went to a Waffle House, right? I'm sitting there and I'm eating and I'm reading a book. I don't know anybody, I'm alone. I'm eating and I'm reading a book. And this waitress comes over to me. What you reading for? Said, wow, I've never been asked that. Not what am I reading, but what am I reading for? Well, God damn it, you stumped me. I guess I read for a lot of reasons, but the main one is so I don't end up being a fucking waffle waitress. Am I stepping out of some intellectual closet here? I read. There, I said it. I feel better.
Suddenly, he's just commanding the audience. There's no breaks. It's just perfectly choreographed.
Our emotions are running wild and our mind is stopped, man. The flag burning thing. Oh, God, did that bring up some fucking retarded emotions? They didn't say that. They said if a guy burned his flag, he perhaps doesn't need to go to jail for a fucking year. Pretty harsh on their part, isn't it? People going, hey, buddy, let me tell you something. My daddy died for that flag. Really? I bought mine. You know, they sell them at Kmart and shit, yeah, $3. He died in the Korean War for that flag. What a coincidence. Mine was made in Korea. Didn't die for a fucking flag. It's a piece of cloth. He died for what the flag represents, which is the freedom to burn the fucking flag. And as my friend Jimmy Pineapple would say, case fucking closed.
Bill was a true patriot, and that is like a true American, and a true patriot does question the government, and that's what being a patriot means, is that you question the powers. I mean, I think he was still always proud to be an American, but he was embarrassed about the things that his government was becoming.
Well, once again, I recommend a healthy dose of psilocybin mushrooms. 3 weeks ago, two of my friends and I went to a ranch in Fredericksburg, Texas, and took what Terrence McKenna calls a heroic dose. 5 dried grams. Let me tell you, our third eye was squeegeed quite cleanly. Wow! And I'm glad they're against the law. Because you know what happened when I took them? I laid in a field of green grass for 4 hours going, my God, I love everything. The heavens parted, God looked down and rained gifts of forgiveness onto my being, healing me on every level, psychically, physically, emotionally. And I realized our true nature is spirit, not body, that we are eternal beings, and God's love is unconditional, and there's nothing we can ever do to change that. It is only our illusion that we are separate from God or that we are alone. In fact, the reality is we are one with God, and He loves us. Now, if that isn't a hazard to this country, you see my point. We going to keep building nuclear weapons? You know what I mean? What's going to happen to the arms industry when we realize we're all one? It's going to fuck up the economy. The economy that's fake anyway. Which would be a real bummer, you know. And you can see why the government's cracking down on the idea of experiencing unconditional love. Oh my God. Lift me up out of this illusion, Lord. Heal my perception that I may know only reality and only you.
Stuff like that.
I took mushrooms and went to Astro World, and I had a really bad time.
You're a moron.
They are sacred. Go to nature. Wants to be on the black dragon tripping. I would fucking be puking, man, about 50 yards with each hurdle of the black dragon. Possessed dragon.
Bill was always an all or nothing guy. There was no halfway for Bill. And wanting to experiment with mushrooms was to him a way of trying to like further his evolution as a person.
The world is one magical motherfucker. And if you take a certain amount of mushrooms, you're in a magical world.
It helped him go out there and become a lot more fearless. And part of his art was being able to broadcast cutting-edge ideas to the public. I think a lot of people were still coming to see the shock jock comedian, and now Bill was slipping in some loftier ideas to leave people with. You know, just because this is a comedy club doesn't mean that we can't do something more with this.
We came here for the truth, right? That's all I want out of life is the truth. Is that too much to ask for? You ever see a positive story about drugs on the news? Ever? Me either. Isn't that weird? The news is supposed to be objective. I'd like to see a positive LSD story. Would that be newsworthy just once? Today, a young man on acid realized that all matter is merely energy condensed to a slower vibration, that we are all one consciousness going through itself subjectively. There is no such thing as death. Life is only a dream, and you're the imagination of yourselves. Here's Tom with the weather.
He knew that he was just formulated to be a comic who was supposed to shake things up.
It's all about money, not freedom, y'all. Okay? Okay. Nothing to do with fucking freedom. If you think you're free, try going somewhere without a fucking money, okay?
And when you laugh at him, it makes you think about things you hadn't thought about before.
It's about fucking money, not about freedom. Don't ever think that it is. Thank you. Sorry. I am a child of God sent here to bring salvation to the earth, and you're welcome.
When people walked out of his shows, they may not have admitted it, but they just were changed a little bit.
As Bill evolved as a comedian, the comedy clubs were probably de-evolving.
Thank you, man. Be my little echo. Thank you. It's my mother. And, you suck. You fucking cunt. Get the fuck out of here right now. Get out. Fuck you. Fuck you, you idiot. You're everything that America should be flushed down the toilet, you fucking turd. Fuck you. Get out. Get out, you fucking drunk bitch. Take her out. Take her fucking out. Take her to somewhere that's good. Go see fucking Madonna, you fucking idiot piece of shit. You suck, buddy. You suck. I can yell at the comedian because I'm a drunk cunt. That gives me carte blanche. I got a cunt and I'm drunk. I can do anything I want. I don't have a cock. I can yell at performers because I'm a fucking idiot because I got a cunt. I want you to go find a fucking soul. Dug a real hole on this one, didn't I? Gee, Bill. You know, this isn't material you're working on for your next Arsenio spot.
Gee, I haven't seen a comic, you know, go running around the room going, I'm a drunk cunt. Is there a punchline coming, Bill? Is there a point of view there? Son, I'm going to need to feel some emotion from you.
I think a lot of comics have confused being a great comic with being like Bill Hicks. Well, no. Being a great comic has to do with your inner voice matching your outer voice. And that's what Bill did. His personality on stage was just an animated extension of who he was.
It's really weird. He would do an HBO special one night at a big arena and then to go back on the road and do crappy clubs.
Yeah.
As Bill then got the HBO special and gained greater and wider notoriety, still there wasn't that explosion. Why doesn't the country like Bill as much as we do?
He went to the Just for Laughs Festival in Montreal. Just for Laughs is like the Cannes Film Festival for comedy. Here he was not only just playing in the arena of international comedy, he was excelling in that arena.
Because I have news for you. I live in the States, a very puritanical place, full of superstition and ancient religions that no longer serve their function on this planet because they're based on fear instead of love. But they say rock and roll is the devil's music. Well, let's say that it is. I got news for you. Let's say that rock and roll is the devil's music, and we know it for a fact to be absolutely, unequivocally true. Boy, at least he fucking jams. Okay, did you hear that correctly? If it's a choice between eternal hell and good tunes or eternal heaven and New Kids on the fucking Block, I'm gonna be surfing on the Lake of Fire, rocking out. Oh, come on, Bill, they're the New Kids. Don't pick on them, they're so good, they're so clean cut, and they're such a good image for the children. Fuck that. When did mediocrity and banality become a good image for your children? I want my children to listen to people who fucking rocked! I don't care if they died in puddles of their own vomit! I want someone who plays from his fucking heart! I want them to fucking play with one hand and put a gun in their other fucking hand and go, I hope you enjoyed the show! Yeah! I am available for children's parties right now.
I don't think Bill knew that this video they made there was going to suddenly be broadcast on British TV, and then that was going to be the beginning of the next step.
I was over in England. I went over to England the day the L.A. riots occurred. I left L.A. the day the L.A. riots occurred. Unbelievable timing. I left L.A. Bye, Bill. Enjoy England. I will. Y'all have fun while I'm gone. We will, Bill. Bye. I land at Heathrow Airport 11 hours later, pass a newspaper stand. L.A. burns to ground. Holy shit. Did I leave a cigarette lit? How much are these? Let's see if my picture's in here, man. It's literally the timing. And I'm over there in England, you know, trying to get news of the riots, you know, and all these Brit people are trying to sympathize with me. Oh, Bill, crime is horrible. Bill, if it's any consolation, crime is horrible here too. Shut up. This is Hobbiton and I'm Bilbo Hicks, okay? This is a land of fairies and elves. You do not have crime like we have crime. I appreciate you trying to be, you know, diplomatic, but you had to see English crime. If only we had crime like this, you know? It's hilarious. You don't know if you're reading the front page or the comic section over there. I swear to God. I read an article front page of the paper one day in England. Yesterday, some hooligans knocked over a dustbin in Shaftesbury. The hooligans are loose. they become ruffians. I would hate to be a dustbin in Shaftesbury tonight. No one knows what it's like to be a dustbin in Shaftesbury with hooligans.
The hell are you talking about? Hooligan, ruffian, speak English.
This is Steve Hicks, Bill's brother.
And I was at work one day and he called my wife and he said, do you have a doctor, a family doctor here in Austin? And she said, yeah, we do. And he goes, well, could you call and make me an appointment? I'm having stomach problems.
Bill called a lot of times while he was waiting to go on or whatever at a show. And I heard Jim say, are you getting ready to go on? And Bill said, no, I'm in the hospital.
And I remember my wife answered the phone, and then she said something like, oh, it's your brother, he's got cancer or something. Like he was making a joke or something. And I got on the phone and, you know, what's up? And he said, well, I got bad news, and, you know, and he said, it just devastated me, you know? I mean, it, you know, so. The foundation of our family was probably laid early on in our lives, and I don't think there was ever any hesitation of decision in Bill's mind that he just needed to get back home.
Bill was encouraged by how those tumor markers were going down, and that's why Bill didn't want anybody to know.
His desire to continue to work and perform came before everything else.
Because he still traveled. I mean, this was in August, and he was still traveling and performing.
Receiving an awful cancer diagnosis and still wanting to work. I mean, how many people really could do that?
And you know what he used to say was, when he was on stage, it all went away. He just got in his zone and did his thing, and he never felt it, never thought about it.
You listen to any set after he knew he was sick, and they're phenomenal, raging. You can just feel the, I gotta get this shit out.
I have this feeling, man, because you know there's a handful of people actually run everything. That's true. It's provable. It's not a fuck. I'm not a conspiracy nut. It's provable. Handful, very small elite run and own these corporations, which include the mainstream media. I have this feeling who's ever elected president, like Clinton was, no matter what your promises you promise on the campaign trail, blah, 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 when you win, you go into this smoky room with the 12 industrialist capitalist scum fucks who got you in there, and you're in this smoky room, and this little film screen comes down, and a big guy in a cigar, roll the film. And it's a shot of a Kennedy assassination from an angle you've never seen before. That looks suspiciously off the grassy knoll. And then the film, the screen goes up and the lights come up and they go to the new president. Any questions? Just what my agenda is. First we bomb Baghdad. You got it.
He actually included tripping on mushrooms as part of the sobriety.
Suddenly Bill calls out of the blue, hey, I think it's time that we have another ranch blowout. I'm like, wow, okay. And we just hadn't, it's not something that you do that often. It's pretty intense.
That last day we tripped out here, Bill was preparing for his last Letterman appearance. It was only a matter of days. He was taking this one really seriously. And of course, Bill was the only one thinking that this was gonna be the last time he was going to perform something to be seen by the entire American public. And he called me up. He was like, oh, dude, I think I finally did it. It went so good. And then
on October 1st, 1993, stand-up comedian Bill Hicks performed on David Letterman's new late-night talk show for the first time. It was a classic Hicks set that everyone had come to expect. In less than 7 minutes, Hicks delivered some of his most stinging commentary on America to date. The comedian's performance never made it to air that evening, Letterman cut Hicks out of that night's episode.
Here's comedian Richard Belzer.
I can't quote you club owners or television executives by name, but I know that the nature of what Bill did was not universally applauded and accepted because it did challenge the status quo and might upset certain political sensibilities in the audience.
Supposedly it's the American creed, which is free men. They can say what they want, believe what they want. That's a powerful idea when you see somebody that believes so much in that kind of freedom.
Writer John Lahr.
He wrote me a 32-page letter, handwritten, a sort of a creed occur. He couldn't understand the situation just because, you know, he was a free spirit. He was, the whole point of it was a joke. These jokes had import. But it was the prescribing of his freedom which so offended him. And what it did also do was give him a more material for his belief, correct in my view, that television worked to control the society, to keep the culture credulous, to keep it from thinking, to enchant it, literally, to spellbind it. And his job, as he saw it, was to break the spell.
Go back to bed, America. Your government has figured out how it all transpired. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control again. You are free to do as we tell you. You are free to do as we tell you.
Well, our relationship with Bill Hicks came to kind of a peculiar ending, made all the more peculiar by the man's death. And I have personal regrets about how our relationship developed prior to his death. So it makes me doubly sad that he's now not around so that we can, I think, correct mistakes that were made on his behalf. So I feel a personal sense of regret regarding that.
Let me tell you a little bit about the program tonight. We have a lovely woman by the name of Mary Hicks. And I'm guessing you may perhaps don't recognize this woman's name, but her son, Bill Hicks,
yes,
was a stand-up comedian, and he appeared on our old show Late Night 11 times, and we always loved Bill. He was tremendously funny and had a great energy, and we just got a big kick out of him. And his first late-night performance was November 15th, 1984. 1984. That's so long ago now.
I can't remember.
And it was exciting that night because it was his network television debut.
Huh.
And his 12th appearance, we had him on this show October 1st, 1993. And he came out and he did his stand-up about 5 or 6 minutes. And afterwards, in considering what I had seen, and it was an error of judgment on my part. Just a mistake.
Really?
I made a decision, I think, born of insecurity more than anything else. And I said, I don't think we want to have that on the show.
So we
removed it from the show.
Right.
And when I say we, I mean the production staff. But the decision was mine.
Yes.
And And like I say, looking back on it, I had no real reason. I don't know why, and I'm sorry that I did. And it was a mistake.
Uh-huh.
So what we're going tonight, and then the sad part of this story was later, the following year, February 26th, which coming up, oddly enough, will be about 15 years, the anniversary of Bill's death. He passed away on February 26th in 1994. He was only 32 years old. And sadly had pancreatic cancer. But I think only a few members of his family and friends knew it at the time, and we found out about it, of course, later. So as you grow older, things come in and out of your mind, and you think, well, you can't really correct mistakes you have made in life all the time. But I thought perhaps just symbolically here tonight we will have Bill's mother on, talk about his life and his career, and then we will show you what was taken out of this show back on October 1st, 1993. So that's what we're going to do. We'll be right back. Oh, also, look at this. The Gaslight Anthem. The 59 Sound. We'll be right back with tonight's Top 10 List, everybody. And there you go. And there you go. And there you go. Thank you, Felicia. And nice job. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a nice welcome to the mother of the late, great comedian, Bill Hicks, the lovely Mary Hicks, everyone. Thank you very much for being so gracious and so generous to come and visit with us here so we could take a look at Bill's shot on the program that never got on. And let me again, if I haven't previously, just apologize for the heartache and sadness that my decision caused to you and your family. And, of course, made all the worse by the knowledge that at the time Bill was terribly, terribly sick. And not many people knew that, did they?
Very few.
Very few, yeah.
And I appreciate you saying that.
And when the diagnosis, it was pancreatic cancer, is it true that he moved back into home with you folks?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. That must have been a wonderful time in an odd way, of course.
In an odd way it was. It was a privilege, and it was what I expected. You know, most people, when they're sick, want their mother.
Yeah.
So he came home. Of course, you know, he was continuing to go out.
He was still working.
He worked until January.
Mm-hmm. And did you learn things about his life on the road as a comic that maybe a mother doesn't want to know?
Well, I found out.
Yeah.
And it should have curled my hair, but it didn't. And yes, he did try to tell me what he had been doing from the time he left home at 18. And some of it, you know, should have bothered me, but at that time it didn't.
Yeah.
Because I knew Bill. And he had come out of the bad part of the time that he had.
Mm-hmm.
So I listened. And and I would not have had him go through that if I had had my choice.
Did you know early on? Did he know early on that he wanted to be a comic? I'll bet he knew maybe long before you knew.
Well, he knew a long time before I knew. He always said when he was... up until the time he got interested in comedy, that he was going to Texas A&M to be a vet.
Oh.
He loved animals, mm-hmm. and that's what he wanted to do. And then he got interested in watching Johnny Carson,
mm-hmm.
and he read books about Woody Allen. So he got interested in that. He said that he saw Johnny Carson on TV, and he thought, ooh, you mean you can make a living doing that? So he decided that's what he would do.
Yeah, yeah. And did he perform early? Where could you, looking back, did you see, remember, oh, I see what he was doing. He was trying his comedy on the family or, you know, parties or stuff?
Dave, there are no showbiz people in our family.
Mm-hmm.
So... what he did, we just thought, was our child doing that. We
yeah.
certainly didn't think it would go into a career.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Not for a long time. But
Where is your family from, by the way? We should mention
well,
that.
Well, that's hard to tell because we moved so much.
Mm-hmm.
But we lived for 12 years in Houston, which is where Bill went through school.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he got into comedy
yeah.
in Houston.
And was his early material or maybe continuing? Was it about family? Did you recognize jokes? Did you hear jokes about yourself?
Well, I didn't hear jokes about me for years, but I heard that that he was telling jokes about me and the rest of the family. But you know, that's all he knew when he first started.
Sure, that's right. And would you go see him perform when he was starting working in clubs and other venues and
oh,
stuff?
Oh, no. He said that if we came, he wouldn't go up.
Mm-hmm.
So I, of course, didn't know about comedy clubs, and I thought, well, how strange. You know, if you're on the program, why don't you have to go up? But so we didn't go.
Mm-hmm.
He asked us not to, so we didn't go.
Yeah.
And I will tell you something. He asked his dad and me to go see a musician that he admired. And so my husband said, well, Bill, can we have dinner there? And, of course, Bill thought that was real funny because that was not the kind of place where they had served dinner.
Right.
But we went, and Bill did not go with us. He went with a group of friends. And my husband and I sat at this little table, and some young man came and sat at the next table to us by himself, and he kept looking at us, and finally he said, well, what are y'all doing here? Because we were the only old people in there. And we said, well, we came to see this musician. And I said, well, what are you doing here? And he said, well, he was a college student, and on his way home, he heard that this man was performing, and he liked him, so he just came straight there. But he couldn't understand why we were there. Mm-hmm. And then Bill came over and spoke to us. So, you know, I guess he realized why we were there. But anyway, Bill pulled things like that on us sometimes.
So do you remember anything about the musician you saw that night?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. How was he?
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
What kind of music?
Well, can I tell his name?
Oh, sure. I think that would be
useful. His name is Eric. What is Eric's last name? Eric Johnson.
Oh, Eric Johnson.
He's very good.
Yeah, okay.
Have you ever heard of him?
No. Paul, Eric Johnson?
Is he a surfer?
No.
Galveston?
Well, I mean,
on the Galveston coast of the Gulf of Mexico, Galveston?
He could, but I don't think so.
All right. I thought so.
No, I think that...
How did you feel about coming here tonight? Was this an easy decision for you to make? I thought...
Were you surprised that I accepted?
I believe I'm surprised when anybody comes here. No, wasn't surprised. But part of me thought, well, she has every reason not to come here.
That's right. I had a lot of reasons not to come. And I thought about it, and then I decided to come.
Good. I'm glad you're here. And again, I know I can't make up for the damage that was caused, but I hope symbolically this means something to you.
Well, it does. Right. And I will tell you that was a very hard time 15 years ago when that happened. And I just will have to tell you that it was.
Well, I'm well aware of that.
I know that.
I don't know personally how difficult it was, but I can certainly, now that I have a son, I can certainly imagine what that
was. You had to have a child to know.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. What else do you want to know?
I tell you what we're going to do, Mary. When we come back, we're going to play the tape from October 1st, 1993. We'll be right back with Bill Hicks, everybody. Here we go. So this will be now October 1st, 1993, and I think it's safe to say that some of the references now, I mean 16 years ago, are not going to seem perhaps all that contemporary, but I'll bet it'll just be fine. You must have seen the videotape, right? It's not the first time you've seen it.
No.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it recently.
Yeah, and when you see it, you must be very happy and pleased to have seen it, and sad also, obviously.
Really? I mean, I'm all of that.
Yeah, okay. So we're going to take a look here tonight, and I want you folks to enjoy this, honestly. Here he is now doing stand-up comedy on this stage in a segment that I had taken out of our program October 1st, 1993. Here's the very funny Bill Hicks.
Thank you. Good evening. Very excited to be here tonight, and got some great news today. I finally got my own TV show coming out as a replacement show this fall. Yeah. Thank you. It's not a talk show. Don't worry. It's a half-hour weekly show that I will host entitled Let's Hunt and Kill Billy Ray Cyrus. Thank you. It's fairly self-explanatory. Each week we let the hounds of hell loose. We chase that jarhead, no-talent, cracker idiot all over the globe. Till I finally catch that fruity little ponytail of his. pull him to his knees, put a shotgun in his mouth. Then we'll be back in 94 with Let's Hunt and Kill Michael Bolton. Also, look out for our Vanilla Ice, MC Hammer, Marky Mark Christmas special. And I don't want to give away any surprises, but Marky Mark's the first one we catch and kill on that show because his pants kept falling around his ankles and he couldn't run away. I crossbow him right in the ab. Bring the whole kids, the family, and everything. It's a Christmas spectacular. I don't know what my deal is. I'm like a 31-year-old curmudgeon. That's the deal. You know, I went to a dance club the other day, you know, and dragged against my will, you know. And this girl asked me to dance, which I thought was hilarious, you know. Would you like to dance? You know, I'm like, yeah, you read my mind, you know. That's why I'm leaning in the darkest corner closest to the exit, you know. I'm about to boogie. I'm about to cut a rug. But it's weird. Women have this weird myth. You can tell the way a guy is in bed by how he is on a dance floor. I think that's ridiculous. What does it matter? You know what I mean? If a guy is on a dance floor, really getting into it, enjoying himself, expressing himself, what does it matter how he is in bed? He's gay. Real men don't dance. They sit, sweat, and curse. Speaking of homosexuality, you know, I consider myself fairly open-minded, but something has come to my attention I find absolutely shocking. I don't know if you've heard about it. These new grade school books for children to teach them gay lifestyles. You know what I'm talking about? One of them is called Heather's Two Mommies. The other is called Daddy's New Roommate. I'm going to have to draw the line here, folks, and say this is absolutely disgusting, okay? It is grotesque and evil. I'm talking about Daddy's New Roommate. Heather's Two Mommies is pretty cool. I don't know if you really check that out. They're hugging on page 7. Oh, go, mommies, go, go. Anyway. Makes me miss my youth. People annoy me. You know what's really annoying me? These pro-life people. You ever look at their faces? I'm pro-life. Boy, don't they look it. They just exude joie de vivre, you know? You see them trying to go to an orphanage and adopt a kid. We're pro-life. We're here to adopt. Kids are just, oh, don't pick me. Oh, no. I'll eat gruel, 15 to a bed, no problem. Just keep Heather's Two Mommies coming and we're fine in here. I'm pro-life. You know, if you're really pro-life, do me a favor. Don't lock arms and block med clinics, okay? If you're so pro-life, do me a favor. Lock arms and block cemeteries, okay? Let's see how committed you are to this idea. She can't come in. She was 98. She was hit by a bus. There's options. Are we going to have her stuffed? What are we going to do with her? We're pro-life. It's the same look smokers give you, too. I'm a non-smoker. I'm a pro-life non-smoker. I'm getting that look a lot these days because I started smoking again. And I had 9 months without a cigarette, and I started again. And I'm getting that look. Are you applauding me starting or stopping? What are you... The smokers are, hey, you're back. Non-smokers, it's terrible. I can't believe he started again. Why? After 9 months. I have this belief. If that scenario is at all true when you die and you go to heaven and St. Peter meets you at the gate, I have this belief. The first thing he's going to ask you is, you got a light? You mean y'all smoke here? Yeah, that's why it's heaven. These aren't clouds. This is cigarette smoke, pal. Hell is the non-smoking section. You want to look at them for a minute? Okay. I can't believe what they do to their bodies. It's so smelly. It smells like an ashtray. Why do they want me to smell that? God, that's hellish. Exactly. Light up and come on in. Hendrix is on harp tonight. So I've been traveling. I was in Australia. I was in Australia over Easter, which was interesting to note. They celebrate Easter the same way we do, commemorating the death and resurrection of Jesus by telling our children a giant bunny rabbit left chocolate eggs in the night. I wonder why we're messed up as a race. Anybody got any clues? I've read the Bible. Can't find the word bunny or chocolate anywhere in the book. Why those two things? Why not, you know, goldfish left Lincoln logs in your sock drawer? You know, just making stuff up. Go hog wild. But I think it's interesting to note how people act on religious beliefs. You know what I mean? Like a lot of Christians wear crosses around their necks. Nice sentiment. But you think when Jesus comes back, he's really going to want to look at a cross? Ow. That may be why he hadn't shown up yet. He's going, man, they're still wearing crosses, Dad. I'm not going. No. They totally missed the point. I'm not going. Forget it. I'll go back as a bunny. But,
just great.
He looks
tremendous, and I've not seen that videotape or any part of it since that night. And seeing it now, it raises the question: what was the matter with me? What was I thinking? That was just tremendous. He if anything, it says a great deal about me. It says more about me as a guy than it says about Bill, because there was absolutely nothing wrong with it. Just perfect. And the fact that, and I expected it to be somewhat dated being that old, man, it's not. It's just great. He, in fact, I guess this speaks to the suggestion that he was way ahead of his time. Mary, this has been a good night for me, and I hope a good night for you.
It's been a very good night.
God bless you.
Thank you,
nice
very
to
much.
See you. We'll be right back.
I get to go on stage and tell people what I think, and they listen, and not only listen, but laugh. I'm going to hate this? Then I would be definitely a desperately troubled person. It's a great life.
Right before we hung up, I said, I'll see you again. And he said, I know, and hung up.
Is there a point to all this? Let's find a point. Is there a point to my act? I would say there is. I have to. The world is like a ride at an amusement park. And when you choose to go on it, you think it's real, because that's how powerful our minds are. And the ride goes up and down and round. It has thrills and chills, and it's very brightly colored, and it's very loud. And it's fun for a while. Some people have been on the ride for a long time, and they begin to question, is this real, or is this just a ride? And other people have remembered, and they come back to us, and they say, hey, don't worry, don't be afraid, ever, because this is just a ride. And we kill those people.
Shut him up.
We have a lot invested in this ride. Shut him up. Look at my furrows of worry. Look at my big bank account and my family. This has to be real. It's just a ride. But we always kill those good guys who try and tell us that. You ever notice that? And let the demons run amok? But it doesn't matter, because it's just a ride. And we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace. Thank you very much. You've been great. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
The audio for this podcast was pulled from various sources around the internet. You can find links to all those sources in the show's notes. The songs you heard during this podcast were Still in Hollywood by Concrete Blonde and LaGrange by ZZ Top. You can stream those songs wherever you stream your favorite music. Our theme song is Rocket Sled by Blip. Special thanks to Jeff Calhoun. Abandoned Albums was recorded at Thunderlove Studios. Produced and written by me, Keith R. Higgins. Engineered and mixed by Steve Beasley. edited by AJ Royce with help from Mike Kunt.
Original music by Mike Pellegrino.
If you like what you've heard, please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating. It really does help. Thanks for listening.
At Twitter, we are at Abandon Albums, and on Instagram, we are at @Abandon_albums.
Grazie.
Bailey Leaf, Rob Janicki, S.W. Loudon, Michael Janicki, Steve Beasley, Mike Pellegrino, Therina Bella, Peyton Janicki, and of course, our executive producer,
Rufus Thunderwolf.
And now, until we meet again next time, I remain as always obediently yours.
Abandoned Albums is a production of Paw Print Media.